This is Natalie McLean, and I'm sitting here in my office amid stacks of paper that really ought to be filed, and some empty bottles that definitely should go into the recycle bin, but I'll do that later. Right now, I'd like to read to you from my new book, Red, White, and Drunk All Over, A Wine-Soaked Journey from Grape to Glass. I've selected the introduction because I think that will give you a taste of what this book is about. I remember the night I tasted my first good wine. My future husband, Andrew, and I had just graduated from university and were enjoying our wealth relative to our student days. We dined out a lot, and our favorite place was a small Italian restaurant just around the corner from our apartment. The first time we went there, the owner, a tall, burly man with fierce dark eyes, asked us if we'd like to try the Brunello. We thought at first it was a regional dish, but it turned out to be a red wine from central Italy. We were relieved just not to have to tackle the wine list. Neither of us knew much more about wine than which fluffy animals we liked on the label best. When the owner opened the bottle tableside, the pop of the cork seemed to pierce something inside me and relieve a little pressure. He poured the Brunello, a rich robe of mahogany, into two tumblers, with none of the pretentious sniffing and approval ceremony. "Cimo," he said, and bustled off. As I raised the glass to my lips, I stopped. The aroma of the wine rushed out to meet me, and all the smells I'd ever known fell away. I didn't know how to describe it, but I knew how it made me feel. I moistened my lips with the wine and drank it slowly, letting it coat my tongue and slide from one side of my mouth to the other. The Brunello trickled down my throat and out along 1,000 fault lines through my body, dissolving them. My second glass tasted like a sigh at the end of a long day, a gathering in and a letting go. I felt the fingers of alcoholic warmth relax the muscles at the back of my jaw and curl under my ears. The wine flushed warmth up into my cheeks, down through my shoulders, and across my thighs. My mind was as calm as a black ocean, and the wine gently stirred the silt of memories on the bottom, helping me recall childhood moments of wordless abandon. Andrew's eyes had softened, and we talked with the wonder of unexpected abundance about our lives together, our career goals, our hope for family. The pasta seemed unnecessary next to this wonderful wine. To paraphrase Robert Frost, our conversation glided on its own melting as we moved from delight to wisdom. By the time we were on our second bottle, I started to feel so flammable that I wondered if I were violating the building's fire code. When we finally got up to leave, we realized that the restaurant was empty. We said goodnight to the owner, and he slapped Andrew on the back as if he were choking on a breadstick. That was the first of many happy evenings, and we drank that Brunello for a year. A pilot light had been ignited inside me, and over time it would grow into the flames of a full-blown passion. Today I joke that I started drinking seriously when I met Andrew. Andrew's good-natured about this because there's still some upside to having a wine writer for a wife. However, my earliest childhood experiences with wine should have driven me into the frothy embrace of beer forever. Growing up on the East Coast in the 1970s and 1980s, I'd be given one undrinkable glass of wine to toast the New Year and another at Easter, usually from the same box. During the rest of the year, my Scottish family knocked back beer and whiskey. My teen drinking began and ended at the same high school dance, behind the utility shed where most of the illicit activities took place. I chugged half a bottle of syrupy sparkling wine, and not only did it taste wretched, but it also made me spend the next day in a vice grip of a searing sugar withdrawal headache. After this, there were family celebrations. At a cousin's wedding, I drank their homemade wine, Tanya and Ronnie's True Love Forever Chablis. I hoped the marriage would last longer than the wine. In the years that have passed since we discovered that Brunello, the taste of wine has helped me store many memories. I remember one particular bottle because of the weather. Andrew and I were snug inside a rented cabin as the rain battered the roof, dripped down the chimney, and hissed on the fire. Thunder rolled overhead as the windows rattled. The wind whipped across the lake in angry gusts as if hurling itself at our cabin. The smoky aromas of that Rhone Valley Syrah wrapped around my head and filled my body. The storm outside made the calm pleasure of the wine deeper, more sensual. As long as my glass was full, I wanted it to rage for years. Even when I'm drinking alone, my mind will still clink with the past toasts, the glasses drained, the fond farewells. Some wines will always taste like a lost argument or a long embrace. I think many of us have a secret cellar in our minds where we collect our empty bottles filled with memories. As I developed a taste for wine, I wanted to find the words to describe the way it lightened and lifted me. I'd long admired the way Colette, Dorothy Parker, and M.F.K. Fisher wrote about food and drink. They fused the mind and body with their narratives, and I reread my favorite passages until I was drunk on their prose. My real wine education has largely been through people I've met and the places I've been. Most of the time I learn something interesting, not because I ask an intrepid question, but because I stumble on something accidentally. And I'd love to say I was born with an uncanny palate, but I was just born thirsty. I still recall my first formal wine tasting. As our guide droned on about ripeness units and rainfall levels, I nervously knocked back all of the wine in front of me. I needed a couple of stiff ones just to be there. Then I looked around and realized that all the others had only sipped their first wine, and they were busy writing notes. To avoid the disapproving stares, I put my head down and started scribbling too. My grocery list. The desire to write about wine has been irresistible. I couldn't believe people would actually pay me to drink. 3 years ago, wanting more independence and a more direct connection with readers who shared my passion for wine, I took the plunge and launched my own website, nataliemaclean.com, and a free e-newsletter. The comments and questions I got back from readers added to my own curiosity. I started to wonder about new issues. For instance, why are Burgundy's wines so sought after and so costly? What makes them different from wines made in newer regions, such as California? Is it just a matter of climate and soil, or does the vintner play a larger role? I had no idea. Then there were all the other aspects of wine to consider beyond just the making of it. What about buying it, tasting it, matching it with food? I wanted to find out why we accord wine such high status, more than any other drink we consume. We rate it, we age it, and we often remember it years after we drink it. Why? This book is the result of my journeys through the wine world, from vineyard to wine shop, from restaurant to dining room, in search of the stories to help answer some of those questions. Writing this book has deepened my belief that wine both brings us together and brings us closer to ourselves. In drinking it, we find camaraderie and consolation. Comfort me with Cabernet. I hope you've enjoyed this introduction, and I'd love to hear what you think. Please email me through my website, nataliemaclean.com, and I hope you have an excellent bottle tonight.